Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and I promised that I was going to get into a couple of different things, and I'm kind of going to weave them together because I don't want to ponder too long on this, but what I want to do is I want to end up with some very good questions. I want to pose some questions to you. That way you can try to figure out, you know, academically and objectively, what is the truth for yourself, for others, if you care to share. Anyway, this show was also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that speaks about the solution in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. Sorry, nobody else is talking about it, even though I'm just the backbencher, and even though we're probably the one of the newest shows out on the air. The fact is, the states possess all the authority necessary to undo everything that the federal government is doing. I know that's going to be a mess, but actually it all will unravel very nicely because it's just like a house of cards. You know, once you blow the house of cards down, I mean, and the cards go everywhere, you just sweep them up and throw them away. It's not that hard. So the listen number to listen to this show while we are, you know, airing this show. And if you cannot stream the show, 605-562-4209. And actually, if you go online right there on the Red State Talk Radio, at the very top in the banner, you will find that there is another line. It's 605-313-0599. So by all means, go ahead and find yourself the number that you like the best. They both, I think, come in crystal clear. And as far as I'm concerned, you should be able to listen to everything that you want to hear regarding this show as well as any other Red State Talk Radio shows. So with that, let me just kind of dive into what we're going to talk about today. Because like I said, I've been kind of teasing this for a few weeks now. But I think it's time to take a deep, objective view to the descendants of Ishmael and the first son of Abraham. I know I've been kind of telling you Baphomet, and who the heck is Baphomet? And if you start looking at the origins of all of this and so forth, I think you'll kind of find, anybody can do the research on this, but I think you'll start putting things together. I don't know. Maybe, you know, you won't. Maybe this is just great entertainment, but I've never claimed to be an entertainer. I would just much rather look at things in an analytical state and try to come clear with and come clean with what is probably the truth. So with that, let's go ahead and dive into the old groveling, because I want to get into the meat of this show as fast as possible. So we have Red State Coffee available on eBay. The link to that would be on the reclaimingtherepublic.org website, right there on the homepage. Click on the link to Red State Coffee. You'll be able to get grinds and beans. If you drink coffee, please support our sponsors because they will support this show and actually our efforts, the efforts in trying to get the word and the concept of Republic Review out. Now, there are other ways you can support. As you know, we got the crowdfunding on GoFundMe. That link is on the exact same page, reclaimingtherepublic.org. And you also know that if you have a phone, if you know how to use a computer and you want to get involved, you want to become a leader, then just send us an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. reclaimingtherepublic.org. Now, I've told you that I've received a listener's letter asking me some very specific questions. I'm going to get into that today. I'm going to stitch all of this together because what I want to do is I want to pose questions. I don't want to create a sensationalism or ire, but and there's real danger when you start talking about Islam, you talk about Muslims and the faith of Islam, then you actually start touching on some very, very hot topics because, you know, people get killed when they start going down this path. But I think it's very important that we actually have kind of this objective view of the origins and so forth. And why? Because I got a listener that sent me a letter, and this listener basically felt like he wanted... I will tell you, if you send me an email and you use accolades and you try to flatter me and so forth, I see right through that. So you don't have to be giving me compliments. So let's just get to the meat of the matter, because if you can't get to the meat of the matter, then I think there's something going on. And so this gentleman was posing questions regarding Islam or the Muslims and interfaith and why Christians are having a hard time getting along with Muslims when Muslims are very open to Christians. And he started using biblical verse, you know, about, you know, loving thy neighbor and this type of stuff. And, you know, the two greatest commandments. And so understanding the approach that somebody would want to use, I can understand why this person, one, started going down this path of trying to do that. And so what we want to do is I want to kind of not necessarily get into the nuts and bolts of what this person wrote, but I want to get into the nuts and bolts of the separations of what divides these three religions, actually, what separates Islam, what separates the Jews, and what separates Christians, and why we can't get along, because a few hundred years ago, we could. And as a matter of fact, it was very common that I'll start it off with the descendants of Ishmaelites. They were actually fighting shoulder to shoulder with the Jews and with the Christians until Islam was created. And so let's go right straight into the one other thing I've got to do. What are you doing for Constitution Day? Let us know. We want to plug it. We want to help raise the awareness of the Constitution. We want to get more and more people becoming clearly aware that the Constitution is a contract. We want people to start understanding, and the best way to do that is to actually use Constitution Day to recognize the Constitution, get that business, get somebody going to actually, you know, recognize the Constitution, hand out constitutions, get some business to do that. Let us know what you're doing, and we will let everybody else know. I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank you for helping the show grow. We have really stabilized up into the, you know, the top 20, it seems like. We seems like we're resting up there for the hour. Now, I know we're not the leader, we're not the number one, but I am here to tell you that if you would start letting other people know about the information, solutions, and the questions we have or we present, like today, then I honestly think that people will actually start tuning in and actually start getting more involved, because people are tired of being, I don't want to say pushed around, or people are tired of being misled. People are tired of going, oh, this is the way. We got to create this party, this Tea Party thing. We've been bamboozled for years, and I know one of the biggest problems we're facing is apathy. There is a huge apathetic problem. So I would ask that you tell people, hey, this is it. This is the real McCoy. We have the ability. As a matter of fact, we don't have the ability. The states have had the ability all along, and all they have to do is wake up and assume the powers that they possess. Now, as I always do, I've looked, and there is no sign that the federal government is going to get rid of any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. So that means that you and I have to do it. It's not in the news. Even though there's all sorts of talk and posturing, and Iran is causing problems. And the fact is that they're always going to cause problems. And really, it's kind of sad, but we're actually going to get into Iran as well, because it's not because of Islam that Iran is where it is. Iran is the old former Persia. And if you look at the biblical understandings of, I believe it was Isaiah who talked about Gog and Magog, and I've mentioned this before, Persia and what we consider the Russian Empire, or the old, I forget the name of it, but they, you know, the old kingdom, Gog and Magog, they were split for thousands of years. And it looks like Iran or Persia or Magog is going to create an alliance with Gog. And as a matter of fact, I am here to tell you that if you look at the weaponry that they're beginning to use, they're actually using Soviet Union. They're buying Soviet Union stuff because they won't buy our stuff anymore because we won't sell it to them. So they have to buy the second-rate stuff. And yeah, they're going to be able to shoot down, you know, drones and those types of things. But I'm here to tell you that these stories are not going to go anywhere. And as a matter of fact, it's only going to ratchet up and up and up. And so we have to start focusing really on the end game. And the end game is Republic Review if we want to save the Republic. So with that, we're going into a hard break. We've got a couple promos. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. So what we have to do, and I really don't want to make this about religion, but this, you know, we can't dive into the concepts of division between Christianity, and I'll use the term Israel. Because if you understand Israel, Israel is not the tribe of Judah. Judah is only one fraction of Israel. We already know that there are these lost 10 tribes, at least those of us who read the Bible and understand that. There's some people that just don't care. there are some people that have never read the Bible. It may be those who've just read the Quran or different faiths, because you got to understand Christianity and Judaism are not necessarily the largest religions in the world, right? Hinduism, Confucianism, or whatever the Communist Chinese Party allows is probably one of the few. And as a matter of fact, I think they've kind of rooted out religion of their people. And I think that's not going to bode well. And the other is obviously Islam. Now, we can't delve into these topics without getting into religion. But what we want to do, and I really want to try to keep this at an academic and objective level. Now, prior to Israel becoming Israel, there was an old empire that was kind of ruling the center of the earth, if you want to call it that. I mean, there were other empires and dynasties. As a matter of fact, the interesting thing about the Egyptian Empire was the fact that they wanted to chronologue and wanted to record ancient histories that they possibly could. So they actually went up to the current day Mesopotamia, I think. I'm going to mispronounce things because I'm really bad with words. But bottom line is, these were the people that survived or, you know, came back after the flood or inhabited the area after the flood. And there were those who had some kind of word of mouth that had either dealt with those people before Noah. But here's the interesting thing, because John Roberts in The History of the World talks about the ancient lore of the people who inhabited that area prior to the flood. And they recorded these concepts that there were multiple gods. There was one god that was known as the creator. There was a different god that was known as the medium or the, and fundamentally, it was the Messiah that they were referring to. And there was a different god that was considered like the comforter or the teacher or basically the Holy Ghost. And so these ancient people that lived on the earth had this plurality of gods and so forth. And in Egypt, they actually recorded some of that as well as other things. And John C. Robert kind of exposes this fact that good old Egypt, what they did was they actually recorded the facts instead of trying to, you know, because they, at that point in time, they weren't revisionists. They were just trying to capture things because they had been around for a long time and they'd finally grown to a point and they wanted to kind of record the facts. There was nothing in it for them in trying to change history, or there was no point for them to try to change the flavor of things or the narrative. They had no concern about the narrative. And that's what's fascinating, because some of this stuff that was coming out as raw facts actually starts to make sense when you start reading and looking at what they were recording. But anyway, the Egyptian Empire ruled from around, I'm going to say, about 3100 BC, and I mean before Christ, not before current era, and to about 800 BC. Now, even though the Egyptian Empire never really was completely crushed and destroyed, it still kind of existed, because even in the Roman Empire, right, there was Mark Antony and Cleopatra, right? But anyway, I digress. If you really look at the Egyptian Empire, and I've talked about this a lot because I talk about slavery a lot, and this is one empire that actually released their slaves before the job was done. That's why they never finished some of these things that the Jews were supposed to do. And that lives as a testament to the world that Egypt was unable to finish all of these great feats that they were planning on doing, that the Pharaoh had done, that these slaves were going to do for them. Now, if you understand the origins of Israel, the origins of Israel actually came from one guy. And this is when God came down and made covenants and kind of communicated with Abraham via, I believe the man was Melchizedek. And Melchizedek was known as the Prince of Peace. And Abraham paid tithes to him. And anyway, so Abraham started receiving covenants, but that's not this whole story, because the interesting part of this whole story that has created such a pile of history and dead bodies that we have to really delve into his two sons. Now, his first son was Ishmael, and the first son's mother was Hagar. Now, Hagar was either Egyptian, or at least that's where they purchased her, because she was a concubine for Sarah, Abraham's wife. And so Abraham was a very blessed man, by the way, because he paid a very honest tithe. As a matter of fact, I think you'll find, I think it's in Hebrews maybe, where, you know, Abraham was paying tithes to Melchizedek, and he wasn't just paying one-tenth of his earnings, but he was actually paying one-tenth on the whole. In other words, if he had losses from floods or what have you, he still paid a full one-tenth on what he should have got for the year. Now, with Ishmael coming along, because Sarah was barren, she couldn't have a kid, well then, you know, guess what? Hagar started playing politics. Well, she really started playing politics when Isaac was born. As soon as Sarah was able to bear a child, well, her son was the older one, and her son was going to be the, you know, the inheritor of the kingdom and so forth. And so as she started playing politics, Sarah was quick to draw the line and said, Abraham, they need to be banished. And so Abraham took Sarah and Ishmael out into the desert and left them there, and, you know, for them to go off and do whatever they needed to do. And Sarah and Ishmael went back to actually back to Egypt. And so they were blessed there, and they thrived, and supposedly they created some tribes as well. But bottom line is, the the descendants of Ishmael, whether they had tribes or not, they were called the Ishmaelites. And so this is the oldest son of Abraham. And Isaac, he had a son, and his son was Jacob. And Jacob had 12 sons, which created Israel. And so the 12 tribes of Israel, that's why I'm bringing this in here, the 12 tribes of Israel is what makes up Israel. And I'm not going to cite all the 12 tribes, and it doesn't really matter. What matters is that there were these two half-brothers. One was kind of, you know, banished and a little upset with that. But over time, because he was blessed, they actually were able to bond, and they lived kind of close together. It's not that they were mortal enemies, but they, you know, they had their little skirmishes and so forth. But over time, they started bonding. And as a matter of fact, prior to Ishmael leaving is when Abraham started receiving covenants. And one of the first covenants that Abraham received was the covenant of circumcision. And so Ishmael, I think he was 16 years old or what have you, and I don't know if I've known some men that have gone through that as an adult, and that is so painful that, I just can't even describe it, because I've never gone through it, and it's just like I've never gone through giving birth. I've gone through some painful things in my life, but I've never done that. And so Ishmael really suffered prior to his being banished, and so and if you understand as a 16-year-old, how much do you really know about, you know, the Gospels or, you know, about God, religion, and those types of things, even though at that point in time, yeah, as a teenager, who doesn't know everything about the world already and you can't tell them anything? I mean, that is the, you know, standard of a teenager. But it was interesting that he received the covenant of circumcision, but he did not receive the other covenants and, more importantly, the priesthoods. And so, as time went on, at first there was discord, and then these two lines, these two half-brother tribes, as they were existing in the world, even though they were separated, they started coming back and they started bonding. And as a matter of fact, as Israel developed prophets and as Israel's prophets started performing miracles, the Ishmaelites began to truly follow the prophets, and they knew that these prophets were the prophets of God. That they clearly account for this. This is a part of their history. And as a matter of fact, it is also a part of their history that I'll have to hold that so you can stay tuned in when we come back. Because I think this is the most pivotal part. And as a matter of fact, it still stands today with Muslims and Ishmaelites, whatever, with Islam. So we will be right back after these two promos. So please stay tuned. And I'll be right back after this. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so, as we were just going into break, I remember telling you that Ishmael did receive the covenant of circumcision. And so I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe the Muslims still practice that covenant. And so, and when I say covenants, these are kind of like rituals. Some people call them ordinances or what have you. So what's really important, because they still take the same assertion and position today, that Islam and Muslims do not possess the priesthood. They still hold this position today that they do not have the priesthood, okay? And so this is interesting because they didn't possess the priesthood. This is why they followed the prophets of Israel. Go do your due diligence and you will find that they had high admirations for Isaiah, Moses. And as a matter of fact, I think Muhammad even spoke that if Moses and Christ was there, he would lift them up and carry them so that their feet would not be soiled in the earth. Bottom line, they followed the prophets of Israel. And as you know, the prophets of Israel were pretty bad.
I mean, these guys performed miracles that, you know, when somebody uses the term a biblical proportion, that means that, you know, it is just beyond comprehension of how anybody in those days with technology and so forth, how they did, how did Moses split the Red Sea? Obviously, it was the power of God. How did Ezekiel? One of them was basically calling the other descendants of Israel, who I forget the name of the god they had. I think it started with a B. And they created the sacrifice. And so they, you know, this prophet, and I want to say it was Isaiah, that had these guys, you know, create this altar and a sacrifice, and they were supposed to burn this sacrifice, and so this this god of theirs was supposed to come down and, you know, take up this sacrifice. And it waited and waited, and as a matter of fact, this prophet taunted them. And so after, you know, they gave up and said, well, obviously we can't stir him up. And then that's when, you know, this prophet said, okay, well, we have all of this wood, but the problem is it's too dry. Let's get water on it and let's soak the wood really wet so that we can burn it. And everybody's going, you can't burn wood. That's, you know, anyway, what ended up happening was when he called upon the God of Israel to come and take up the sacrifice, he took up everything. He took up the water that was in the trenches around the altar. He even took up the other, these other religious leaders' altar sacrifice. I mean, he just consumed it all. And that's when everybody goes, okay, we know for a fact that the God of Israel is the God of the world. And they witnessed that miracle right there when this fire descended down from heaven. And that's a biblical kind of proportion type of story, right? Well, there were very similar types of stories as well. And as a matter of fact, later on, there was Daniel, who was in Babylon. And when Daniel was observed by the king of being so righteous and all the miracles that he witnessed when Daniel was thrown into the lion or when his three friends were thrown into the fire, the king understood that this was truly the, and the king actually had the entire kingdom worshiping the God of Israel because he witnessed the miracles. And so do you know what religion that was? Because this was ancient Persia. That religion, my friends, was known as the Zoroastrians. Now, I'm here to tell you that the Zoroastrians were wiped off the face of the earth. They were completely destroyed by whom? Well, by Islam and Muhammad. I don't think Muhammad was around at the time, but bottom line, it was that warning that Islam must conquer the world and, you know, the whole world must be converted and so forth. And so they went over there and they completely killed and forced conversioned everybody. And that's how they built the empire that ended up becoming the Ottoman Empire, moving towards the European empires until America, England, and some other ones knocked the Ottoman Empire kind of off their little pedestal. Bottom line, what I want to get into, though, is the fact that these different faiths were very divergent, but they were very close. The Ishmaelites, Israel, and the Christians, after Christ had died, they were very close. And as a matter of fact, if you understand when Christ lived, and actually I believe it's the Hebrews chapter 5 and 7 talks about how Christ possessed the priesthood as a part of his birthright, being born of God. And so the priesthood was integral around the God of Israel as well as Christianity. And as a matter of fact, the Catholic Church claims direct lineage all the way back to Peter. And you can do the research on that because you have to have the level of authority. Because if you understand, if you go look at what the priesthood means, the priesthood basically means that you have the authority of God. And so If you also look in Hebrews, you'll also find this little caveat that says that no one can take the honor of the priesthood for themselves. They have to be ordained, or they have to have it given. And that's why Christ ordained 12 and so forth and so on. And so he actually built a church. Christ built a church, and he was, you know, baptizing. It says this in the New Testament throughout the Gospels that Christ and even his apostles were doing baptisms. Bottom line, getting through this whole fact of these two faiths of both Israel and Christianity, they were pretty lined up. As a matter of fact, Christ even said he was the fulfillment of the laws, the atonement and everything else. Christ performed miracles that had never been performed before. And as a matter of fact, he took a layman, Peter, and Peter even performed miracles by walking on the water and doing other things. Christ made the dead rise. He healed lepers. I mean, there was nobody. As a matter of fact, the reason why he was killed was because he was scaring the crap out of everybody, because he could do everything. There wasn't anything he couldn't do. He was casting out spirits. Christ scared the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and they had him put to death, as you know. And so as a part of that process, he also went through the atonement. But anyway, in the Quran, God, this is a quote out of the Quran that talks about the sons of Ishmael. And he says, God has gifted all of Ishmael, Elisha, Jonah, and Lot a favor above the nations. So Muhammad, when he came along, and before we get into Muhammad, I want to emphasize this, that the descendants of Ishmael were lockstep in line with the gods of Israel and Christ. This is why when they went to war, they actually fought shoulder to shoulder in assisting Christians as well as Israel. And so a few hundred years later, Muhammad actually, in the establishment of Islam, actually had to fight a civil war throughout the land of Ishmaelites to get and to establish Islam. But what he ended up doing was he completely broke away from the complete doctrine of Israel and Christianity. And somehow, and this is the question, one of the questions that has to be asked. How did he become a prophet for the God Allah? And so if you do the due diligence and look up who Allah is and go look out and find out, you know, who Allah was, the question is, you know, where was this process of becoming a prophet in a lineage that was void of the priesthoods? Now, I get it. Allah was not the same God as the God of Israel, and he's definitely not Christ, right? But there are some other inconsistencies that we kind of have to kind of mull through. And so here is, if you want to call it a paradox or an inconsistency, I don't know. But it was interesting because you got to remember Muhammad had learned the teachings from the Bible, both the New and Old Testaments. And so he understood some of this doctrine of Israel as well as Christianity. And so ironically, it was the archangel Gabriel who also met with Daniel. And so in other words, Gabriel has been consistent in providing the guidance, protection, and so forth for Israel for years. And then all of a sudden, Muhammad has Gabriel come down and he reveals a completely different God and a completely different paradigm. Instead of the spiritual covenants and living prophecies and so forth, it was a completely different world. And you have to, you know, start delving into the Quran to understand that. The Quran has a very, very specific I'll just call it, it is a book of governance and so forth. There are not ordinances or what we would call ceremonies of spiritualness other than the conversions, and that's just accepting Muhammad, or I should say Allah, But we're out of time, and so you have to hear what we have to tell you next so that you can start asking the right questions. We'll be right back after this. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. All right, thanks for sticking with me on this, because I know this kind of gets thick and deep. But here's the questions I think that really need to be debated on the basis of one very specific thing, and the specific thing is the prophet, the priesthood, or I will just say the authority, because when Moses became really the first deliverer of Israel from Joseph, I mean, Joseph delivered Israel and saved them, and then over time, they became enslaved by Egypt. How they became enslaved by Egypt had a lot to do with Egypt's animosity and jealousy, because, I mean, here are these kids that could decipher dreams, and, you know, they're not a part of Egypt. And they're getting this, you know, higher status. And so they were quickly demoted into slavery. And they were slaves for a long time. And I bring this up when we talk about slavery. Why? Because if there's any reparations that need to be done, then I think Egypt, and as a matter of fact, if you understand the Egyptian Empire, it was all of Africa. And I believe all of Africa probably owes, because they didn't have any separations of power or anything. It was just the Egyptian Empire, and it wasn't, you know, a constitutional, or I should say an enumerated constitution with limited powers. You know, it was pretty much, you know, if you understand the Pharaoh was God. The Pharaoh was the god of gods, and so he considered himself the most powerful entity on the earth. And so he was speaking for all of Africa. Anyway, I don't want to digress back into slavery. What I want to do is I believe what begs the question is, where did the authority come from for both Israel? We already talked about Christ. He was his divine birthright, being the Son of God. He had that birthright given to him. And that's what Hebrews talks about. I think it's, like I said, I believe it's 5 or 7, somewhere in there. But Moses was of the tribe of Levi, and the Levitical tribe was the tribe that held the priesthoods. And so if you understand that Moses' brother Aaron, right? I mean, he was also of the Levitical tribe. So brothers, okay, now we understand that Moses was a part of that. So his priesthood was a birthright as well. The interesting thing is that Muhammad did not have a birthright because the priesthood died with him. In other words, his sons didn't have the priesthood. So the question of the authority of how Allah designated through the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Israel, Gabriel, that same angel that was a part of the God of Israel, now is speaking and delivering the Quran to Muhammad. And so some of these questions, I think, because the understanding the lineage and understanding how this authority came upon Muhammad from Allah is, you know, it begs to be asked, because I've not seen anything that really lends to that. Here's the other thing. If you understand the prophets and the miracles that they perform, splitting the Red Seas and so forth, go look at what all the prophets have done and the miracles that they performed of Israel. Look at Christ's miracles, and then look at Muhammad's miracles, because Muhammad had some miracles. He won battles. I mean, his miracles were on the battlefield, where he had insurmountable odds and they killed, you know, all sorts of people. Now, I know this, and I'm not trying to discredit, because what I want to do is I want to have an open and honest dialogue. But I do know that if, you know, you're the victor, then you control the pen. You own the pen that writes the history. And so however you write that history becomes the fact of what is carried down in your legacy. The question is, did Muhammad use his priesthood to, you know, raise the dead? Or did he use his priesthood and or his authority to kill people and take control? And so some of these things kind of have to, I think once we have an honest and open dialogue to really start putting things on the table, I believe this. I believe that the descendants of Ishmael will be able to start finding the connections with Israel once again. I believe that they will start finding the connections with Christ again. Now, how they do that, I don't know. But I do know that you can't walk away from that, the birthright of circumcision and your birthright of Abraham and the promise of Abraham. I mean, these the descendants of Ishmael are half-brothers to Israel. Why is it that they, you know, they've got to be killed? They're the arch-enemy of Ishmael now. And so that's a different twist that I don't understand how it, all of a sudden they became arch enemies and so forth. But in this letter I sent out to this gentleman that was asking me these questions, and I can tell you I already understand his position because of the way he answered my response to him. And so you can honestly tell that there's this concept out there that it doesn't matter, you know, once you start buying into, you know, once you start following the yarn, you end up getting yourself into the ball. Anyway, in this email that I sent to this gentleman, I told him that there were five doctrines that you needed to clearly understand. The Hijrah, and that is the process of migrating people into a country to where you start populating, working together to become the dominant people of the country, and you take over the country through assimilation. Not assimilation of citizens, but assimilation of, you know, population and so forth. Takia and Tawira is two different doctrines that are almost of the same feather. Same with Kitman and Maruna. And both of these doctrines, or all four of these doctrines, have a lot to do with the fact that they have, you know, Christians and Israelites, or anybody that of Israel, cannot, you know, lie. I mean, it's a sin to lie. You have to, you know, you cannot, it doesn't matter who you're talking to, you cannot tell a lie. But these doctrines, Takiya, Tara, and Kipman, and so forth, these four doctrines all allow and excuse, and it is okay to be deceitful, it is okay to lie, it is okay to mislead people. So, my question is the better question isn't is, but how is it that all of a sudden the Ishmaelites, who have lived this doctrine of Israel for thousands of years, instantly be twisted and turned? And that's why I say I think the pivotal answer you'll find is in the civil war that Muhammad ended up fighting. And as a matter of fact, I believe he killed his uncle. That was the first casualty as he started moving forward. And then when he finally went, I don't know if it was Mecca, Medina, or whatever, but that's when he basically said, there is no other God but Allah. And so, you know, that's where he started building Islam at that point, writing the Quran, the Hadiths, and so forth. So the question is, how did they get to this point of going actually in, if not a perpendicular direction, in the exact opposite direction of living the, you know, the ceremonies and following the spiritual ceremonies of salvation, such as sacrifices and all of these other things, and they've, you know, taken a different turn? And I'm going, well, these are good questions that I think need to be posed. And I believe my listener will probably end up coming back to me. And I don't know, maybe he'll, you know, claim I'm making some assertions that I haven't made yet. But I honestly believe that when you really start demanding that some of these answers be, you know, some of these questions be answered and put it on the table, then I think we might actually get somewhere. But the problem is that there are so many malfeasions, there are so many with machinations and designs, they do not want the truth. And so here's our biggest problem. We can't get to the truth until somebody actually has, I think, that influence. And I don't believe that that's going to happen until Christ comes again. But let me ask you this, because after Islam was created, there were these things called the Crusades. The Crusades were trying to preserve the Holy Land from these people, the Ishmaelites, who were now called the Muslims and Islam. They were going in and trying to destroy and occupy and take over the Holy Land. Why? Well, the first crusaders, as they were engaging, as a matter of fact, I think it was in 1012, something like that year. See, I'm bad with names, but I'm okay with years. The crusaders, there was a letter that was describing how these people that they were fighting, these Ishmaelites, were basically calling upon Baphomet to, you know, help them, and they were doing things to help, or, you know, again, call upon Baphomet. And so these letters kind of referred to this, and there was a few letters where they started talking about this. Well, bottom line, the Knights of the Templar were really the problem for both Islam as well as France. And the King of France basically said, hey, you guys are worshiping Baphomet, killed them, took all their money. Well, I ran out of time, but I want to get back into this some other time. But when we come back, we will be diving into some other topics that are of the day. God bless. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.